Actually, I do have to put it on to kind of get the hair out of it first before I put the gook on and put the Band-Aid on it, so it works a number of ways. Good morning.
Good morning.
I again want to thank you all for your wonderful, loving participation in this. Not just this group, and I hope you realize that, is that we talk about this an awful lot, that when we choose to consciously raise our own vibration, or, you know, to put it in very simple language, to think loving thoughts or peaceful thoughts or more loving thoughts or more peaceful thoughts, then we can't help but raise the vibration of all beings, whether they have a body or not. And I believe there are some beings in here without bodies, okay? We just can't see them. Do you remember? I remember in Catholic school we used to we didn't do this all the time, but I remember one time we had to scoot over just on one side of our desk, and make room for our guardian angel on the other side. Okay. Oh, sorry. That was kind of overly cutesy, but you know, it's interesting. After how long? You know, maybe about 65 or 70 years, I remembered that still. Isn't that interesting? It's still there.
Make room for your guardian angel.
Make room for your guardian angel. Or, you know, the way one teacher put it was, you know, that it's kind of silly to be prejudiced about someone who doesn't have a body. And just because they don't have a body doesn't make them any... And it doesn't make them any smarter than you are either, just because they don't have a body. So, you know, the spirit shows up and says, hey, look, dig me, right? I'm a spirit, right? Well, they might not know any more than you do, right? Just because they don't have a body doesn't make them any better than you are either. So it's kind of interesting the way we have our own judgment-filled agenda. I do too, okay? You're not this, you're not that, you are this, you are that, right? I think that's another one of the many things that Jesus taught in, I guess, after what we might call what we normally term the resurrection. Some people look upon that as being a physical body, and that might very well be true. It was probably more of an auric, etheric body that showed up, but also could produce physical form without any problem, because an auric or etheric body can do that without any problem. Okay, but it's almost like... I'm still with you, even if I don't have a body. Wherever two or more are gathered together in my name, here I am in the midst of you. Even though I don't have a body, can you accept that? So all that kind of... Well, I wonder what it would be like if when we come... Let's just say, for example, we come walking through the doors here into this little room called the chapel, and we could leave our personality self at the door. You can still bring your body with you, right? Because you do need a place to sit. But you could leave your personality self at the door. What would that be like? Remember in the movie Cocoon, where he kind of unzipped his physical body and this being of light sort of stepped out? Remember that scene? It was so wonderful. It was years and years ago, but it just kind of unzipped this skin. This skin, what Alan Watts called this skin-encapsulated ego, right? I unzip this thing, and this being of light sort of comes out. And the rest of it just sort of falls like an empty blanket on the floor. Okay. Now, what would it be like if you knew that you did that every time you came walking in here, whether you're conscious of it or not? Because you do. Because I think everybody, without realizing it consciously, makes a deliberate effort to say, you know, I'm leaving that stuff out there because I choose to enter a different realm or a different place of consciousness. Now, that stuff doesn't disappear. As you will know, you'll pick it up when you walk out of here. Well, you'll probably pick it up in the next 5 minutes, right, even if you don't walk out of here. Doesn't disappear, but we begin to recognize more and more deeply that it's not who I am. And I realize more and more deeply that the kingdom, however you want to speak about that, or however you want to visualize that, the kingdom is right here. And that's just the truth that always is. So the question that is being asked here of the guides who are generating some of the answers, where do I go when I die? I know Doreen has done this, and I'm sure a lot of other people have too, is to commune with people who have passed over the Rainbow Bridge. Okay? So where did they go? Do they go someplace else, or are they right here? I don't have a body anymore. Where am I going to go? See, we're limited in our thinking by this three-dimensional sort of mind of this is it. You know, we even think we're solid, even though that's been proven that we're not, okay? That we're mostly empty space. I'm mostly empty space up here, okay? And so are you. But it's empty space in the sense of three-dimensional space. It's not empty in terms of a deeper reality, is it? Where do I go when I die? Before we get into that, does anybody have any unfinished business you want to just bring up or look at or absorb? Because I know I really yacked last week. I kind of overstepped my own boundaries. I got carried away, probably because I was giving a sermon upstairs. Thank you for indulging me. Where do I go when I die? I also thought of that wonderful Norman Greenbaum song, Spirit in the Sky. We used to play and sing that in my old rock and roll days. We never could quite duplicate the sound in the beginning of that song. You know, how whatever he did with that amplifier and whatever he did with that feedback was something extremely unique. If you're not familiar with it, just YouTube it sometime and just listen to the first couple of bars, all right? It's really kind of fascinating. Doesn't have anything to do with this, but it's just kind of fascinating. Well, if it's funny, it has something to do with this. You notice laughter only exists in this present moment. You might be laughing about something in the past, but you're laughing about it right now because you're holding it in a different kind of light. You are not your body. Thank God. Okay. I'm not a hole in my forehead. I'm not a zit on the end of my nose. Although there are times when I become that. When you die, and again, we have such finality connected with that word, death. Page 347. And we've imbued that particular concept, death, with just a whole lot of fear and a whole lot of stuff that I presume in other times of human beings' existence, it wasn't all that scary. It was just part of life. Like, well, you know, here in our society, old age is looked upon as being a burden. You know, whereas other societies, it is looked upon as being a blessing. You know, you become a crone or you become a wise man. You become this resource of marvelous energy and experience that, you know, you can teach with, that other people can learn with. And we don't have that anymore. We just wait for you to get decrepit enough and then we throw you in a home. Not everybody does that, but So that the whole concept of death is imbued with a lot of ideas about fear, but it's also gets in the way of, see, most of our Christian teaching, unfortunately, is that you get your reward when you die. We used to call that pie in the sky when you die. And so you have to die to enter. We kind of confuse this. You have to die to enter into the kingdom. Well, you have to die to yourself to enter into the kingdom. The egos don't enter into the kingdom because they don't understand that they can't, right? But if I die to myself, if I recognize the truth of who I am, then, you know, I've got the golden ticket. I don't need Willy Wonka. I've already got it right here. That's all I need. If you become like a little child, if you recognize that it's here and recognize that it's now. So it's not death, it's not physical death that brings us there. It's already here for you and me. All you need to do is put on your wedding garment that's already available. Doreen.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if anybody in here has read Proof of Heaven, written by the neurosurgeon who passed on. It is so incredible. If you want to read about amazing, wonderful experience that this person had when he went into coma for 7 days. And that's what this book is about. It is just absolutely wonderful. Proof of Heaven. Eben Alexander. E-B-E-N Alexander. It's fabulous. And then he has another one that we've recently finished reading too.
And that's Living in a Mindful Universe. Proof of Heaven. Now let me give you a little bit of a what happens to me when I hear something. Oh, I gotta get that book. I gotta read that book. Now that's okay. But please recognize that what you are doing and what I am doing, because I'm always looking for the next one, is I am feeding an insatiable mind that is always looking for information. And that's all right. Because every once in a while, a piece of that mind information filters down into my soul. But what I am really, really looking for is I'm not looking for proof of heaven. I'm looking for the experience of heaven that already exists inside of me. That's what we're all looking for. Okay? So I'm saying this out loud for myself. Please don't get sidetracked. This was an old Al-Anon joke. When you die and you go to heaven, right, or before you get there, there are going to be two doors. And one says heaven and the other says lecture about heaven. Okay, and most of us are lined up on the lecture about heaven line. Okay. So, I mean, and again, recognize that we have a tendency to do that, but also recognize what is it that my soul is hungering for? Not just another book, not just another story, not just somebody else's experience, as wonderful as that might be, but I am yearning for my experience. And I will get that when I allow myself to be as open as I possibly can to it. Not saying, oh, there it is, there it is, there it is. Because it's going to happen, it's happening all the time. That split second when you notice the fall colors and you notice how long they've lasted, right? And you don't make a judgment about that. You're not saying, oh, I wonder if that's because the weather was too dry or too wet. You're just there, just in that split second of wonder and of beauty. And of course, then my brain kicks in. Well, how long is that going to last? Well, it could be a little bit better because that didn't turn the same time as that and blah, 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 blah. Okay. But just that split second when you and I were there. And see, I believe as we are open more and more to that, the more and more that we are in that experience, not judging it, not being, I'm not even aware that I'm in the experience, I'm just in it. You know, it'd be like if you were scratching a cat under their chin, okay, and they were purring. They're not saying to themselves, oh, I'm being scratched under my chin, this feels so wonderful, right? They're just in the experience. I'm right there. I'm just present to it. And, you know, that is open to us as well. Now, will we forget? Yes. Will we kind of get lost in examining the experience? Yes. But that doesn't take away from it. As I was talking to Bill about a little bit earlier, I think we're becoming more and more involved in just being in the experience and recognizing that and waking up to that. Yeah.
Would you say we choose the split second? Or would you say the split second chooses us?
The question is, would I say, do I choose that split second? Or does that split second choose me?
That's a great question. If you're in the split second,
does it matter? Now, see, that wasn't my answer, okay? That was somebody else's, okay? But I had to be quiet enough to hear that, okay? Because I already had an answer in my mind.
Well, I mean, I've had experiences where I've felt that split second that you're talking about. And then I remember where it was at and what I was doing, and mm-hmm. the fall color moment, and then I say, well, I'm going to go back to that same place and have it again. And it doesn't work.
that is what you're going back to the same place, even the same circumstances, right?
Are
and trying to experience
same,
that. That's where we have fallen into what we call magic and superstition, right? Because what we've done is we've connected a group of external events with an internal experience. Okay. Now, certainly the external events have contributed somewhat to the internal experience, right? They have kind of knocked on the door, opened the door, right? But they have not created that. Now, I do believe, this is more of my answer than Spirit's answer, I do believe that our soul or our spiritual nature is always living in that sense of awe or wonder. I'm just not always plugged into that. I'm just not always connected with that. Yes?
Isn't it when the ego gets out of the way is when you come into that? It's when, just for a split second, you're not aware of your ego. It's not saying anything mm-hmm. to you, just for a split second. And you're in a beautiful place. I think that's what is your ego has gone. It's shut up for a second.
I think that's another way of putting it. And we could also look at that same thing in terms of not necessarily a really comfortable experience, but when we surrender, when we get to a point where we just kind of hit the wall, as Popeye says, I can't stand no more. We kind of hit that spot where we recognize whatever it is we're doing isn't working anymore, whether we're caught in an addiction or something else that we're kind of pushing the river, and we realize, you know, this is not getting me, and I just kind of take a breath and I let go. And at that moment of surrender as well, I believe I am egoless. Of course, it's going to come back 30 seconds later, right? But in that moment of connectedness with my divine self or my divine truth, okay, it's either no longer there or it's irrelevant for that moment of time. Yeah.
Is that just to be on the flip side of that? Because I have had very traumatic experiences in my life, and it's very hard for me to overcome my ego looking at that. But going from, for lack of a better term, from the very bottom frequency of fear and terror, and to bring that to the joy and understanding and love, is kind of the same situation. I had to sift through all my ego and get that out of the way, because all that ego cuts me off from that divine. I can look at a traumatic experience in a different light, and it's my perspective that brings that joy. that perspective from ego or from the eyes of Horus, the divine mind. It's whether I'm, you know, where I'm coming from.
The way Paul put it, not Paul in this book, but the Apostle Paul, I live now, not I, but the Christ liveth within me. Now, if you just sat down with that sentence, I live now, not I, not my personality self, not my ego, not who I think I am, right? But I recognize that Christ liveth within me. In other words, I still have this personality self, but I am allowing the divine self to shine through that. And when I say I am, right, really it's the divine self within me that's allowing the divine self. It's not me, it's not Jerry sitting here saying, well, I'm going to let the divine self flow through me now. That's crap, that's my ego self again. Right? So again, it comes down to that spot, that space of surrender, that space of unthinkingness. It's complete awareness, but it's not thought awareness, it's not intellectual awareness. When you are being loved by someone, when you are allowing yourself to be loved by somebody, whether they are 5,000 miles away or sitting right next to you, you are being. You're not making anything happen. Oh, I'm letting myself be loved. No, it's not even that. I am open to the love that is coming to me. That's the, and that's where our language kind of breaks down a little bit, or a lot. When you die, when the physical body is no longer required for this journey, you return to the source, and you return to learn, to learn, to learn, to learn what is required for your next mission. As we mentioned last week, the ego looks upon that as being a burden. Oh God, how much more learning am I going to have to do? And the soul looks upon it as being, oh wow, what's going to open for me next? What a trip. Holy, holy, and free. What a trip. I wonder what the next one's going to be. Yeah, Jamie.
Oh, let me have the mic.
Sure.
If you don't mind. I'm in this big project at the Carnegie Center over in New Orleans. They're going to do this 2-month exhibit on me. Jamie Avers saw the improvised life. It's got different sections. Humanity, growing up, jazz, play along records, tobacco, White Castle, you name it. And it's a big deal. So she says to me yesterday, Jamie, I'm going to need those first books when you sold your first LPs and things. And I say, okay, I think I know where they are. I had no idea where they are. So I sat down in my chair last night, and next to me is a bookcase that's piled tall with stuff that I've been wanting to move for ages. For some reason, I saw something. I said, well, maybe that's it. So I, next thing you know, I'm on the floor for an hour sorting things, and on the very, very bottom are these two books that say where I bought the first 500 LPs, who I paid for this, exactly what she wants. I had no idea it was there. And when I got through, I was thinking, the universe is really neat, because now I don't have to worry about this anymore, and I'm going to be able to give her exactly what she wants. And how did this happen? How did this happen that I was drawn to go through an hour and a half's worth of stuff to find what she wanted on the very bottom? And I wanted it too. Mm-hmm. What does that have anything to do with what we're talking about?
Because part of you knew where it was. Can I share a little personal experience here about the same thing? I was in therapy more than once. But I was in therapy with a lady that I really like and really admire. And she has this wonderful way of working with the unconscious mind. And I remember I was struggling with a self-esteem issue. I know that's hard to believe, but I was struggling with a self-esteem issue. And I wasn't quite sure what I needed. And what she would do is she said, okay, Jerry, we were sitting in her office, which was lined with bookshelves and trinkets and all. It looked like a little old bookstore almost. And she said, all right, I want you to just be open. Which bookcase is the answer in? It says that one over there. Okay. Which row? So that one, fourth row, something. Which book? I said, it isn't a book. It's a box. And I looked over on the shelf. I wasn't really looking at the shelf until that time. And there was a little box there. And she said, okay, let's go over to the box and take a look at it. She opened the box up. It was a set of guided imagery tapes that I had created. How do I know that? There is part of us, when I say part of us, there is an aspect of our non-physical nature that knows much more intuitively than our thinking mind can ever possibly totally grasp. One of the things we are doing here is when we are living in non-dimensional time and space, we are opening ourselves up to that deeper reality. Now again, what my thinking mind wants to do is to kind of pin it on a piece of paper like a butterfly, and so I'll keep it forever. Right? And that doesn't work either, okay? Trusting. I mean, we've all been in impossible situations. Maybe situations where we wanted to die, or we didn't want to live anymore. And for each one of us, there has been the intuitive knowing, the intuitive strength, somehow or another, beyond reason, to put one foot in front of the other, and to wait, or be open to, the miracle. However that happens, with a book, with a person, with television show, with a piece of literature, with a movie, with a song, whatever it might happen to be. And we only know that by looking back. Say, oh my God, where did that come from? As you ascend, you have many lifetimes and you learn through them each what you are required to know in order to move upwards and to return to the heart of God, as it were. When one returns to completeness in ascension, one is living in that heart and one is demonstrating this through their knowing. Believe it or not, that is what we are creating for ourselves right now. By participating consciously in this work, however you want to describe this, by participating consciously in this work, that's exactly what we're doing. Completing this, now as, again, it's not in the ego sense of okay, well, when I'm finished with this, then everything's going to be okay. All right? It's kind of getting on that elevator or getting on that escalator and continually move. Here's the next step, and here's the next, and here's the next, and here's the next. Now, the old paradigm told you that you were not allowed to align to the frequency of divine love in body, and that this was reserved for the passage into the afterlife. We will explain this to you. While it is true that once you release the physical body you stand in, you move dimensionally, and then you align to light in a new way. But you can still do this in form. We are not bypassing physical reality when we take you through this process. We are incorporating it. We are coming into form, as it were. The difference was that the balloon had to leave the atmosphere, as it were, in order to go someplace. And now the balloon does not. It can still fly. The atmosphere has changed, And in a way we can say, it has come to you. Now your dealings with the occult, that simply means the unknown, have given you all kinds of ideas of what might be there in the afterlife. And we will move the energies for you in a way that we can in order to support you in your gaining your own knowing of what this might be without your being reasoned with through fear. You understand already that on a very basic level, everything is frequency. Everything is vibrating. And that there are higher and lower frequencies. As you ascend in consciousness, you realign to the new frequency, I am Word. And that becomes your home base. And as you move on to other lives, that is incorporated. This is the last lifetime for some of you before you move into consciousness and have no requirement to come back in a form. But most people are still on their journeys, and this level of ascension that we are gifting you with does not preclude your learning in new lives. Every teaching you get in this lifetime is an opportunity for you to move forward to the next one. And as you grow and learn, you create new consciousness that you can then work with. Our next question has to do with belief in God. Now, there is no difference, frankly, between the Godheads that you have embellished and worshipped throughout time, except the qualities you have invested them with. If you have an angry God that will smite people, then that is the experience of your God, and then that becomes your reality. I apologize, but I know we talked about some of that last week. But just for continuity, I thought it was important to include. As you move into consciousness and outside of the duality of good and bad, black and white, you can begin to learn that anything that would be held outside of the Christ, outside of the love of God, cannot be God. God does not exist outside of God. God cannot exist outside of God. Nothing can. I mean, that was even part of some early theology of Thomas Aquinas. Nothing can exist outside of God. So everything must be included. What you would hold outside of the Christ in frequency is what must be reclaimed in love. We get a lot of challenges about that one these days, don't we? Well, I belong in love, but you don't. I'll prove it to you. So judgment of others, judgment of self, all must be unified, healed, and brought into the light. The Christ consciousness that you are inhabited as wholes all does not exclude anyone. The other gods, you can see, are there for those who require them. You cannot judge someone else's God. All God is one God with a different name. As we go into unity as a group of people, as an energy frequency, as a life, we come into unity with you and all things come into oneness. It cannot be otherwise. What is keeping me from believing or experiencing oneness? Now the requirements for your growth really mean that you stay aware, that you stay in your knowing, and you stay in congruence with your own divine self. We would like you to understand something. The reason that you have come into knowing is not to make you better. It is not to teach you new things. It's to be knowing, to inhabit as knowing. And the process of becoming this in form is not always graceful. The resistance can occur, the periods of unknowing or disillusionment that we spoke of can occur. And beyond that, your own requirements for needs from the past self, those things you have used to self-identify with, will continue to occur until you no longer require them. So we are asking you, please, to be patient with yourselves in this process of realignment and ascension. Who do you think you are, young man or young lady? Well, I'm a divine child of God, unconditionally loved. Who are you? We are letting go of all of those things we think we are. Okay? Not that they are unimportant, not we don't even have to label them as being illusions, okay? They're just not the truth of who we are. Right? And each one of those things, every label I hold for myself, I hold an equal label on you, which is usually different from mine. And so there's always going to be that sense of separation. What was that famous Quaker quote about the only ones I can really believe in is me and thee, and I'm not quite sure of thee. Right? not that any of us would ever get caught in that one, okay? It's kind of a really good, get caught in that one every once in a while. And again, remember, this, we're not talking about the personality self, either yours or somebody else's. Because I don't really understand. I'm talking about the truth of their divine nature. Anything that exists, exists within the divine nature. Cannot exist outside of that. So I can honor the divine within you even if I disagree with your personality self. Even if I can't stand your personality self. Actually, there are some days I can't stand my own personality self, much less yours. But I recognize that's not who you are. But it's so sticky. It's like flypaper, okay? It's so sticky. I get caught in, this is the tar baby, right? I get caught in that 1 minute after the next. And I go, oh, I'm caught again. Deep breath. Let me release you from getting caught up in your personality self, but then at the same time, let me invite your divine self into the warmth and sunlight that I'm sitting in. Because that's the truth of who you are. Is this happening to everyone? And how? It is happening to everyone. Not through the reading of this text, but through the alignment of the frequencies on this plane. You notice how certain things have just snowballed almost immediately. Sexual abuse towards women. Bam! I mean, it was always there. It didn't just get created a couple of days ago. But all of a sudden, it becomes not only important, it becomes a sense that people are carrying with them and saying, my God, how long has this been going on? So it's not new news, but the awareness of it. And now the challenge is, what do you do with that awareness? So I find myself getting into judgment with that one again. So here's a politician, for example, whose shadow side just bit them on the behind again, which happens a lot with shadow, right? So any, you know, stuff I put in my shadow stays alive, okay? And it's going to bite me on the rear end one of these days, right? And go, well, they got their karmuppance. And I say, wait a minute. Where am I going with my judgment? Where am I going with my own guilt? And so the challenges come in all sorts of forms. They come in the form of recognition and awareness. They also come in the form of my own judgment, my own pushing of my own stuff away. and saying, you know, I got to look at my own stuff here too. What was that wonderful one-liner? He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone. Oops. See the rocks drop away from our hands, okay? I don't know about yours, but mine are empty at the moment. I'll pick up another rock, and then I'll be asked the same question again. Oops. It is happening to everyone, not through the reading of the text, but through the realignment of the frequencies on this plane. It is in process now, and much of what you see outpictured in your lives as change is the result of the new paradigm coming in to hold itself and the requirements of the matrix of fear moving out. This is a change, as it were, in consciousness that will be outpictured in your physical landscape. No longer will this be tolerated. No longer will this be hidden under the rug. No longer will we pretend that this is not there. No longer will we pretend that this is okay. And the flip side is also true. No longer will we fall into judgment when we see somebody else in misery or whatever. That's the flip side. No longer will we do that either. Because that's not our job, that's not our right. Okay? I don't know. My job is to do my own healing and recognize with whatever it is I am healing within myself, I am also healing within you. And I'm also healing within all others. You can't do this alone, you can't do this separately. I don't like you, you deserve all the pain you can get. Oh, really? Where's that one gonna go? It was said that the Buddha, when he came to his moment of awakening, that he remembered all of his past lives, not just as a human being, but as any kind of created being. And the first image that came to his mind was he was in hell, being tormented by these demons. And he wasn't a human being, he was an oxen. He was an ox. And there was this demon with this fiery club that was getting ready to smash into this other ox's head just because he was enjoyed being mean, okay? And the Buddha, as the ox, stepped in front of that fiery brand and took the blow himself. And he said, that was the beginning of my enlightenment. It doesn't make any sense, doesn't make any intellectual sense. But you can almost feel the reality of that. Where did that spark come from? Couldn't have come from nothing. Where did that spark of letting go of judgment come from within you and me? Had to come from an awareness as unconscious as that might be, of loving this other being despite what they have done, or despite what pain they are in, or despite what pain they might have caused. Because I know nothing about all of that karmic history. But I don't know about you, I do know pain, and so do you. And I know it does not have to be, or does not need to be reinforced. There's enough of that going on. Let's just take a minute. Deep breath. What can I let go of in this moment? That will free me and therefore free all other beings. It might be an attachment. It might be a piece of anger, it might be a piece of fear, it might be a piece of self-justification. Whatever. You can say and mean, I choose to release, I choose to let go. I am free, I am free, I am free. Thank you again. May all beings be at peace, and may all beings be free of suffering. I will have the new books available after Thanksgiving. Look far ahead into the fairly near future. We will not be having class over Christmas. I forget when Christmas Day is. Is it?
It's Monday.
It's Monday. So we'll not be having Christmas Eve. We'll not be having class. Okay. Just because I won't be here, and I know probably a lot of other people won't be here either. But just so you know.
Thanksgiving,
I'll be here. And then the week after that, no, the week before that, I'm giving a retreat or helping to give a retreat, but I'll be here Sunday morning anyway. Okay. What a joy, what a gift. Thank you.
Jamie, how's Sarah doing?
Hey Jerry, you made me think of something else.